Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy.com, home of the ambitious upstart. And when it comes to entrepreneurship, we tend to think that there's one way to get started. The founder comes up with a great idea, launches, business continues to grow. But today you're going to meet a woman who took a different approach. Deborah Sweeney used to work for Intuit, where she spotted an opportunity to buy one of Intuit's brands. As a result, today she owns and runs My Corporation, which is an online legal and business filing service focusing on entrepreneurs and the small business community. What that means is, if you're starting a company and you're not sure whether to get an LLC or a corporation, MyCorporation.com will help you figure it out, and then they'll help you file your incorporation papers, then they'll help you keep your corporation going, and that's just a small part of what they do, but it'll give you a good sense of it. This interview was sponsored by Scott Edward Walker of Walker Corporate Law. He is the entrepreneur's lawyer, and I'll tell you more about him later, but now I've got to say hello to Deborah. Deborah, thank you for doing this interview.
Hi there, thanks for having me.
If this business was so good, why did Intuit want to let it go?
So it was 2009 when I ran a division for a few years under Intuit. So around 2009, there were a lot of changes, as you probably know, in the economy. And smaller divisions at Intuit were having lack of stability, changing in structure, funding changes. We were basically in a situation where I thought, what if they decide to divest our division? Do I want to just sit back and watch that happen, as I had seen other divisions at Intuit get divested? Or can I offer to maybe purchase it myself? And sort of whimsically, during a conversation with a couple other leadership members, I said, you know, if you ever think of selling it, think of me first. And they actually didn't come back to me and say, okay, we're thinking of you. But they came back and said, "What? Tell us more about your idea, and then present to us the whole big picture." I was general manager of the division, so I also had to look out for the best interest of the financials of the company. So I said, well, there's other options. There's competitors, there's closing the business down, and there's me maintaining the stability, and you know me. And so ultimately, it didn't go quickly, but 9 months later, the deal was done.
Oh, wow. So within 9 months, you were able to do this. You just floated the idea. I was looking at your background to get a sense of whether you're the kind of person who bought companies before, whether you're so entrepreneurial that this just seemed in your blood. But you weren't growing up, right?
No. No entrepreneurs in my family. I was a lawyer before I went in-house. So my passion was intellectual property, trademarks, copyrights, business law, small businesses. I represented, as a lawyer, many small businesses that needed legal advice from an external standpoint. So I was outside counsel before I went in-house for the company, for my corporation that I now own. So it really was not in my blood, and it was sort of a stretch for me. But my husband actually is an entrepreneur, so I had it in the family, and I had, you know, of course, his support. But also, it was sort of like, well, I know how to run it. I'm running it as a lawyer under Intuit. I think I could probably do this on my own. And funny enough, Intuit asked me the same question. What do you think you can do better than we can do? And I don't know, they thought I was a little sassy when I answered them, but it worked out.
What was your sassy response to them?
I basically said, I won't spend as much money as you spend. I'll spend it on the right things. I'll spend it. I won't be having people travel to Europe to look at another, you know, business division. I'll call them on Skype. You know, I'll make better financial decisions. Instead of having, we joked that our office was the Taj Mahal, we had baristas serving us coffee. I said, I'll ask people to get their own coffee.
You know what? I was laughing in a weird laugh because I know where this story is going and what you're able to do, but I didn't realize that you, first of all, said that to them directly, and second, that you would have baristas at the office bringing coffee to people who worked at mycorporation.com?
Well, there was a coffee service, and so they served everybody in the whole Intuit division. So you wanted coffee, you went and everything was made for you. There was so much included, all of the, you know, health, you could go work out during your breaks, you could go get free this and free that, and all the travel that we did. And it was expensive, and a lot of it was attributed to our small division in terms of, you know, they allocate expenses across all business divisions. And I said, if we didn't have these allocations for these insane phone systems or whatever it was, gold-plated elevators, and instead we moved into a 6,000-square-foot office in Calabasas, which is nice, but it's still not, it's just regular. It's an everyday office. It's not crazy. We don't have to have eye badges to get in and out. We just get open the door and we come in. So all of those expenses were expenses that were attributed to our division that now we're in a place where we can be more profitable.
If you didn't have, well, was my corporation profitable within Intuit with all those expenses?
No.
I see. Okay. So if you include the barista and the gold-plated, literally gold-plated elevators?
Oh, I don't know about that.
Okay. And the rest, with that, it wasn't profitable. When you had to negotiate a buyout, was it easy to negotiate with a major company like Intuit?
Well, Intuit knew me for years. And so it wasn't hardcore negotiation. I did have to hire, under their requirements, my own legal counsel to represent me in the deal because they didn't want me representing myself both as an employee and then also as a potential owner buyer. So I did have outside counsel. But often I joked that that ruined the deal because I had a good relationship with them and we all kind of wanted this to work. So it wasn't hardcore, but there were times when we had contract points or things that we, you know, disputed. And a lot of times I was the one who gave because I thought, hey, I know this business pretty much better than the leadership at Intuit in many ways. And I felt like, I can make this successful, I just need a chance. And I didn't want to over-negotiate the deal to the point where I lost the deal altogether.
What's one area that you could have negotiated hard on, but you said, I'll just give it to them because we're...
Pre-existing liability of employees and customers. So for example, most buyers would say, I want every single piece of rep and warranty saying there's no liability, there's no risk, there's no issues. And I knew there were some, but not anything that would preclude me from owning the business or wanting to run the business. So yeah, there's probably an occasional customer who would come back and say, you didn't do something right, or an occasional employee who said, I didn't like the way Intuit handled this or that. But I kind of felt like, as a lawyer, those were things I could probably respond to or hire the right counsel and get enough business insurance to protect myself. I can imagine some other buyer would say, well, you know, I'm out. I don't want to risk this. I don't know what the risks are, so forget it. And for me, I was able to say, all right, I can handle that. I know that it's not that big of a risk, and I can deal with the consequences.
You also negotiated with them. Actually, how much did you pay for the company?
It's a non-disclosure. I'm not allowed to tell. They're a publicly traded company, and I had to sign, of course, an NDA on that issue.
But you didn't have the money to pay up front. You asked them to pay over how long?
So basically, over the course of the last few years, I had to hold lines of credit and all these things and gradually pay off the deal. And so once it was paid off, it wasn't over a certain period of time. It was over once it was done, it was done. So.
Oh, I see. They just said, hey, Deborah, take some time, pay us for this company over time, but you don't have a ticking clock.
As a percentage of profits, right? So it depended on how we were doing.
Whoa, that's an interesting idea that I hadn't thought of. So a percentage of profits goes to them until you hit whatever amount you owe them.
Right.
Gotcha. And then you also said that you had to take out a line of credit. Is that because you had to borrow money in order to pay them?
Well, basically, partially, but I also needed, under our deal, to protect myself in the event that, say, 1 month we weren't successful. They wanted to make sure I had a certain amount to protect my employees and also protect them. I pretty much took all of the employees that were with us at Intuit out. And Intuit is incredible. They really focused on the consumer, the employees, and the shareholders. And so not just as part of Intuit, but then also after the fact. And I think that that was important to them, that something didn't go wrong or I spent money in the wrong place. And then all of their, you know, just all of their customers, all of their former employees were now in a really bad position.
I see. So they said maintain a certain amount in the bank at all times so that we know you can cover it.
You got it.
I see. All right. You also had to pay a little bit up front, right?
That's a non-disclosure.
Oh, I see. Okay.
I don't want to be secretive, but yeah, I don't want to get in trouble either down the road.
Okay. But what I'm getting at is that you still needed to take out a home equity line of credit, right? You still needed to put up your own savings. What was it like to take a risk like this when...
Sorry. I didn't even know that I thought for sure you go in and you say, I need a line of credit. And maybe this is part of my naivety, not being a former entrepreneur. I thought you just go to the bank and you say, look, I have this home. I need a line of credit. Here's what I need to do. And they say, okay, here you go. And I had no idea because the day the bank came out and gave us my husband and I were sitting there and they said, okay, here's your line of credit. And they were applauding. I didn't know what was going on. And basically they were saying that they had not given a line of credit to basically anyone in years, because again, we're talking about 2009. And in hindsight, I'm thinking, what was I just going in there thinking, yeah, of course I'm going to get all this money and I'm just going to ask and it's going to be no problem. But it evidently was a big deal and we had to go through all sorts of hoops without me realizing that this wasn't just standard stuff. And so, yeah, it was crazy. And when everybody pointed out how crazy it was, it made me think it was even more of a big deal. But it's something I look back on and say, when people ask me about when they're coming out of law school, for example, wanting to become lawyers and starting their own law firm or starting their own businesses, I get asked a lot. And I always say that having a really good credit history is critically important to entrepreneurship in many ways. People don't think about it. And they think, well, when I need the money, I'll get it. And really, it really serves me well to have a history of paying debt and paying off my student loans and doing all those things that people sort of flippantly do or don't do. And it served me very well, and my husband having, you know, strong credit scores, that the bank was willing to take a risk in us.
You know, it's interesting that you said that. After I sold my previous company, I decided I don't need any credit ever again. Mm-hmm. And I had, before that, I had $75,000 roughly in credit card and other related debt, and I said, no more. So I went for years without it, and then I said, I might want to borrow some money at some point. I should get a credit card to make sure that I could. And I got rejected for the credit card. It was unreal for like a couple of $1,000.
Right.
And so it's because I didn't have credit history for years.
Right. No, it's so funny because people don't think about it until it comes to be the issue. And even just silly little things like not paying an occasional thing on time, people don't think it's a big deal, but then they realize that actively doing that and being attentive shows character in many ways. And a lot of times, as you know, for entrepreneurs, banks and investors are looking at whether or not you have character and the wherewithal to get it done and whether you're trustworthy. Are they going to invest in you and you disappear with their money? And there's so many things that you don't think about in anticipation that you actually have to do years in advance before it actually becomes something that is important to you. And so I look back and when people ask, what was it that you did? And I say, oh, you know, I had good credit. And funny enough, it served me really, really well and continues to this day for, you know, anything I need from the bank or other things. Silly relationship. I get better deals because I have really strong credit and people want to work with people and companies that do right, you know, by making their payments.
The odd thing is that in some ways, college actually undoes that because college campuses allow credit cards to solicit new customers there because they encourage you to take on debt for paying for school. And many entrepreneurs, when they leave, then don't have good credit. And so they have a hard time doing what you did, which is getting a loan from the bank.
Right.
So you got the loan. You saw some easy wins, like location. You don't have to pay for high-end space. You can pay for smaller space. You don't have to pay for a barista. People can get their own coffee. What are some other wins that you, as an independent entrepreneur, could put up on the board that a bigger company wasn't able to accomplish?
My one big focus from a marketing standpoint was on return on investment. Under Intuit, the goal was to grow. And a lot of divisions within Intuit, their goal is to grow. And that's all that matters.
So growth over profitability.
Correct.
Okay.
Absolutely. And not with all divisions, but with smaller divisions, they can afford to be a little bit more like, hey, we just want to grow, and we'll figure out profitability later, or we'll optimize. And so right-sizing our marketing spend was critically important. So much of what even our primary competitor spends a ton of marketing on radio and television ads, but it's not necessarily profitable spend. And so I was trying to focus on search engine marketing, SEO, developing our networks from a social media standpoint, creating incredible content, recurring revenue, focus on those things where the ROI was the highest.
I see SEO very quickly become a part of the site. So before you acquired them, a lot of text on the site was about, well, there was some Intuit, QuickBooks logo on the site. Of course, that helps out. Soon afterwards, I suddenly see on the very bottom of the site, business structures, incorporation with a hyperlink, C corporation with a hyperlink, S corporation with a hyperlink. You're really starting to think about the structure of the site. You're really starting to think about the way you're linking and identifying the pages on the site. Where did you learn to do that?
So a lot of it was about just things I knew before running the business, or Intuit had what's called centers of excellence. So there were truly, truly excellent people who knew what needed to be done and who knew how to advise you on it. But there was a big gap between information and execution at Intuit. And it's because there were so many big ships going and into it, you know, flying around into it and dealing all the things, the issues that had to be dealt with, that ours was so small in the whole scheme of things that we didn't get very much attention. And so once I had my team, and all they were saying, they were looking at me and saying, what should we do next? And I said, okay, you need to do this, and we need to do that. And then you get some experts on the team. You get an outside, we had an outside advisor for SEO for a short period of time and give us recommendations. And then literally execution, execution.
So after you bought it, you still brought in an SEO expert. You hired a consultant who advised you. I see. But the reason you knew to do that and you had a sense of what would work is because internally at Intuit, you got advice on what to do. Yeah. There just wasn't enough time to implement and there weren't the resources allocated to my corporation at the time.
You got it.
It. Wow. Okay. The other thing that I notice is, so first of all, before Intuit bought my corporation, I saw a site with the text animation scrolling on the screen. I saw a site that looks very early 2000s. Yeah. Then Intuit comes in, buys it out, and I see the reassuring logo of QuickBooks of Intuit and very little, and nicer design, but very little added to the site. Yeah. You come in, and almost like that, the site starts to look really professional. The site starts to speak directly to a community of people, where it used to say my corporation, QuickBooks company or something like that, it suddenly says my corporation, entrepreneurs welcome. So this was part of your plan. Can you help me understand what was going on the inside to help me see how you ended up with this?
I love that you're seeing all this. I rarely have people ask these awesome questions. Yeah, I thought, who are we talking to? We are talking to entrepreneurs, and our site looks like it's corporate and very remedial almost, with very little information and very little education. And so much of entrepreneurs that we knew after tons of research previous that the time from a consumer looking at our site to converting on our site ranged from 6 days, so it's not the same day almost ever, to 6 months. And so we needed, they were really looking for content and education and information that ultimately would then lead them to trust us and when they converted to convert with us. And it was also part of my idea that the long-term value of the customer was what was going to differentiate us from a lot of our competitors. And LegalZoom is our primary competitor. Their focus is very transactional. Lots and lots and lots of customers in and out the door, more, 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 more. And ours is about a whole life cycle of a customer's business. How do we teach them and then get them in our fold and then keep them throughout the life cycle? So registered agent services, annual reports, all of the document storage, all of the annual business filings that need to be done. And wonderfully enough, if a corporation grows and they need to qualify in foreign states, foreign qualifications and business licenses, you can, the list goes on. And so my perspective was, we need to educate and we need to help them understand that we're not just about one transaction in and out. We're about developing a relationship. And that's where all
that.
The entrepreneurs welcome kind of comes from.
I see that. And then there was a section called the learning section, right. Learning center. What I don't see, though, is how did you maintain them? I could understand someone finding your site because you were so well structured. I think even to this day, you get really good organic traffic. I mm-hmm. can understand that. I could understand them wanting to take some time to figure things out. But how did you have them remember that the place where, that helped them figure things out after they searched for it on Google was mycorporation.com and they should come back to my corporation?
I mean, we work really hard on the basics. Things like getting them to sign up for a newsletter, when they call in, engaging with them from a customer service and sales standpoint so that we don't wait for them to call us back, we call them back, or we engage them in a forward-thinking type of way. But also, there's retargeting, and retargeting on the internet is so critically important. If they've come to our site once, we make a really vested effort because we know if they've been there once, they've probably found us to be informative and helpful, not too overly pushy, and ultimately to be an incredible resource for an entrepreneur. So we retarget to them. Whenever they go, we joke about it, we say we follow them around the web, which, I mean, it happens to everybody, but it's been really beneficial to us in terms of maintaining the long-term engagement.
I see. So just because I don't see a clear way of staying connected to the customer, I do see an email newsletter at the top. It doesn't mean, though, that you're not connecting with them again later on, and retargeting is great for that.
And if someone even comes to our site and enters their name or email address, we are able to reconnect with them via a system that we have internally to follow up and say, hey, we noticed you came, you entered your name, and we're able to link back to them and send them an email. And if they
what is the system that you use for that?
It's an outside provider called VTech, and basically they link all the pieces together through for us and then send us the data. And we do a miniature revenue share with them, but it's very, very successful.
With VTech?
Yeah.
Okay. So they give you software, you pay them as a revenue share.
And it's kind of like an affiliate relationship.
It seems like that.
Yeah.
Wow. So I said earlier that you still get great organic traffic. The keyword corporate seal, for example, sends traffic to you. Of course, you've got your own name, My Corporation. But as I was looking at that, one of the things that stuck out is you don't just get traffic from Google. You get traffic from DuckDuckGo. What are you doing that makes DuckDuckGo effective?
We have good affiliate relationships. We've always, since we've, prior to even becoming a part of Intuit and then during Intuit's reign, we work with Commission Junction and other affiliate providers to kind of generate. If you have a site that talks to entrepreneurs or business owners, then we can work with you to issue commission checks back to you for referring customers to us. We also have a very strong partnership base. Intuit's a partner, Vistaprint, GoDaddy. And so those are people who talk to entrepreneurs and small business owners, and then they're also engaging them back with us as we're engaging consumers to their products.
I see. And so where we might just create an affiliate program and put it up on our site and hope some small mom-and-pop sites, or frankly, it's not mom-and-pop, it's some teenager often, who will send traffic over and get a commission, you're thinking about the bigger partners, the Intuits of the world. I see. Vistaprint. Okay. Let me do a quick plug here for my sponsor. And actually, I should ask you this question. So my sponsor is Scott Edward Walker of Walker Corporate Law. He is the entrepreneur's lawyer. And I'll ask you, in a world where someone could come to My Corporation and incorporate on their own, what is the advantage of having a lawyer?
Lawyers are very beneficial in helping entrepreneurs determine entity type or make decisions on buy-sell agreements, operating agreements, anything related to the ongoing maintenance or sell or purchase of the business, even annual advice. I'm an attorney, so I recommend talk to a lawyer, talk to your accountant. They often, when you have all these inputs, you're able to sort of more informed, in a better informed way, make decisions about your ongoing business structure and how you manage it. But with that said, a lot of lawyers and CPAs use us on the back end. So they say, yes, you should incorporate. I can do it for you. And then they leverage a service like ours because we have great relationships with secretaries of state in all 50 states, and we have walk-in providers. So a lawyer in California may not be able to do a Texas filing, or even a lawyer in California doesn't want to wait in the queue at the county of Norwalk to deal with, you know, the filing. So we do the legwork for them, and it ends up being a pretty cost-effective service. So a lot of people say, oh, do lawyers despise your service? And I think, honestly, for the most part, they like us because we are able to make them look good. We get the documents filed, we send them back to them, and they're able to provide them to their client.
And then there's some agreements like the buy-sell agreement, like the partnership agreement,
exactly.
Like I guess they wouldn't be partnership agreements, but how do you break up a company between two partners? What happens if one of them leaves? All those kinds of agreements. How do you raise money? How do you sell your company? All those kinds of agreements. You need a lawyer in order to think them through and to structure them. And at that point, you can either get an average lawyer online, maybe you go to Yelp and you find some local lawyer, maybe you find a cut rate lawyer, or if you're an entrepreneur listening to me and you want a lawyer who actually understands the startup community, who maybe is a Mixer, not maybe, who definitely is a Mixergy fan, so he understands the kinds of things that you're going to be going through down the line. If you want to get started with a lawyer like that, I recommend you check out walkercorporatelaw.com. And if you have any questions, contact Scott. Just email Scott directly, scott@walkercorporatelaw.com. The partnerships with lawyers. It's interesting because I can see for you, Deborah, that a lawyer would refer people to you, and so you'd want that agreement with, you'd want that relationship. But finding all those lawyers is really tough. I've had designers in my audience say that they wanted to work with lawyers, and I see how hard it is for them to get one lawyer at a time to do their website. Mm-hmm. One lawyer. How do you get them?
We do a lot of outreach at conventions. A lot of lawyers have to go for their continuing education credits. We also do trade shows. And then, honestly, we build relationships almost one by one with lawyers, and it does take effort. Even CPA financial advisors a lot of them, you know, we correspond, our sales team sends out 10 emails a day to who we perceive to be financial advisors or CPAs that might be engaged in our service or that we know incorporate businesses. And so you just sort of talk to them and talk to them. You can imagine the network grows quickly, and eventually they're telling their friends, oh, I used my corporation, they were great, they're better than just a document filer, they're actually a service, you can talk to people there. And so it's just a lot of word of mouth too, and once you do well with a certain industry, it sort of flourishes in that regard.
So you told us about how many extra expenses there were because my corporation was part of Intuit. I imagine then that it would be like a snap. We're separated, so we get cheaper office space. Everything is cheap and easy to do. And then I took a look at April Dykeman's notes from your pre-interview with her, and she asked you, what was the biggest challenge as an entrepreneur, as a CEO of this company? And one of the big challenges, you told her, was right-sizing the expenses. Yeah. So what was so hard about cutting expenses?
So you don't know, or I didn't know at the time, of all the pieces, what was working and what was not. Mm-hmm. And so I took piece by piece by piece. Is it radio? Is it my sales team? Is it my commission structure? Is it my tech team? I mean, there's so many pieces. And it took a long time, because sometimes I made wrong decisions. Like, it's definitely, I got to cut back my SEM. And then we had no traffic. So I think, well, that's a problem. So redo that. Or I cut back, for example, one of my sales team members who loved working in a small entrepreneurial environment, was benefit for a large corporate environment. We agreed that it didn't make sense. And then it took a hit on our revenue. So really focusing on who are the right people, what are the right strategies. And I think that was a big stress point for me, because it took a long time to go through each of these avenues and strategically make decisions. And as you know, with an entrepreneur, you have so many other things going on that it's hard to just focus on that item that you're trying to evaluate. So I think that was a huge opportunity.
I see. I see. So you can't just go in and say, we're going to get rid of everything that looks like it's excessive, because there are many things that aren't as obvious. And there are some that seem to be excesses that obviously are not, in retrospect.
Exactly.
What about employees? Is it easy to go into a culture that followed you out of Intuit and say, some of you just aren't going to work out here and we're going to have to let some of you go? Or does that create a big problem with the people who even stay?
Most of the people who are here are almost lifers. So the majority of the people sort of knew what they were getting into, mm-hmm. and had almost been a part of the company before we were acquired by Intuit. But you are 100% right. There are definitely people who were not a fit either. For example, like developers, in a corporate environment, they have their H-1B visa compensated, and they're traveling a month overseas to be with their family. And all of these are variables that are expected in a corporate environment, and especially one like Intuit that really has incredible benefits. But for a small business owner like myself, that just wasn't practical. Having three employees disappear for a month, you know, each was horrible. And then the expectations of salary increases and benefits and those types of things. The one good thing is we were able to keep as much the same as possible, but there were definitively people and roles that were not ultimately necessary. A good example is we had, for example, a lawyer who was sort of our in-house legal decision maker and document management person, and I could do that myself. And so I'm thinking, wait, I'm paying someone X amount of dollars, and this is something that probably would take an hour a day of my time, and those are decisions that entrepreneurs make. Like, I could probably just do it and save all of this money and put us in a better financial position, but I also didn't want to just lay people off willy-nilly, so it was about a dialogue, about maybe a good severance package, about all of these things, which ended up costing us, but then in the long run, saving us money.
What about the attitude? Someone who went to work for Intuit, went to work there for a reason, went because there's a certain personality that they have. Now you're taking them into an entrepreneurial environment, which takes a different kind of personality. How did that work out?
It's taken 5 years.
5 years.
I'm still doing it. You know, every day I'm trying to say, look, this is the big picture. Here's where we're headed. We print on board saying, here's our goal for the month. We're all in this together. Sales matters. Customer service matters. Technology matters. So it is literally every single day something I think about, the entrepreneurial. Whereas when we went into it, we had these monthly meetings where I basically said, you know, here's our numbers and here's how we did. And everyone said, great, or, oh gosh. And then we just moved on, but there wasn't buy-in. And so it has been literally part of my everyday thinking. How do I engage my team? How do I get them realizing that the more we are successful, the more we are all successful. And also it takes the proofs in the pudding. When we see success, I issue better, better return to them, or commission, or a party, or an event. Half the time, honestly, they love to go out for a fun lunch, or I order it, and that does it for them. But it's figuring out what those dynamics are that took me a long time.
I see. And so you're constantly communicating where the growth is, how well the company is doing, and then celebrating even with a lunch.
Starbucks. Anything.
Is there ever a sense that, well, if we really do especially well, then Deborah's going to make out and we can only benefit so much, but she has unlimited upside.
They've never said it to me.
Okay.
I don't think they think that about me. It's possible, but I am really open in my communication. Here's our revenue. Here's our expenses. Here's where things are going. We just had a meeting right before this call, and I was telling my processing team, those are the people who literally produce the documents, they don't perceive the numbers as specific. They're not as attentive. My sales team, very attentive. My customer service team, very attentive. But they're just sort of processing documents all day long. And so I was trying to say to them, here's the big picture. Here's where we're headed. So it's always about engagement. And I think I want them to know, yes, we've grown another 15% month over month and year over year, 20%. But our expenses grow in this way, and here's how we're going to play out at the end of the month. Here's how we're going to play out at the end of the year if things keep going. So I think through communication, I believe with my family, with my kids, with my team here on the floor, I say if we're communicating and we're honest with each other, I think they trust me, and that I don't think they think I'm, you know, going crazy and having this incredible life and the rest of them are just, you know, working day to day for, you know, minimum wage.
I used to be able to do that with certain people at my company, but not with developers. And I almost wanted to have like a number on the developer's desk to say, because of what you coded, here's how much revenue you're bringing in, but I couldn't come up with a way to do it. How do you show someone who's not directly related to the revenue how her contribution is impacting the overall revenue?
Sure. It is a challenge every day. And fortunately, my development team is really hyper engaged from an entrepreneurial standpoint. I would venture to say, although they're paid very well, that they love what they do just because. We have meetings and I go through things and they're more excited about it than I am and about the revenue growth than I am. And I don't even really need to say anything to them about it. So I feel like there are certain people who get the intellectual component of being an entrepreneur and the upside potential and are kind of say things like, I'm in it for the long haul, or I love this entrepreneurial environment. And they also see the other perspective. They worked 16 hours a day at Intuit, and here they work 9. You know, they get the life balance component of it.
Wait, you reduce the number of hours they work?
Yes, because I personally think that it's diminishing returns at some point. Believe me, I believe in hard work, and yep. Coming from a law firm environment, you know, everybody worked crazy hours, but I think there's something to be said for us being understanding of each other's balance. And when we all started working, the majority of us are in our late 30s, and when we all started working together, we were in our 20s. And we've gone through everyone getting married and now having children and really feeling like, gosh, I need to come in late today because my kid has something, and, you know, that's more of a priority to me than making more money. And if it takes an extra 3 weeks to do a release for something, I think I've learned that that's okay. It's an extra 3 weeks. We're doing very well. Let's just keep plugging along. We know these releases will happen. And so I've structured it in a way I think everyone here would say that the work-life balance is so critically important to our success that it's just become a hallmark of who we are.
I found that in a smaller company, you become really insanely dependent on certain people because the whole company goes down if they happen not to be there. What did you do to deal with a situation like that, to avoid having too much on one person's shoulders?
So I'm panicked today. It's funny you asked this question because my operations manager, when I took the business over, I was pretty much running every single thing day to day, and I was so overwhelmed with the employees and time off and sick days and vacation and where they're going and what happened to their cat. I was about to lose it. And so she came in and really literally took over that whole piece. And she's pregnant and leaving on maternity leave in 2 weeks, and I'm flipping out. So I've been working hard. I mean, this become a really big thing for our team. We had our finance leader leave a year ago to make sure we're multi-level trained. Can one person, not just one person knows payroll, not just one person knows our insurance products or our 401k or those critical components that make our business run, but a few of us are engaged on those pieces. And I think that's been critically important. It's even important down to a customer service person. If we have one person who always does what we call confirmation emails, which is after an order goes out, we tell them, we hope we did everything you like. If there's anything else we can do, let us know. And if that person's not here, we need to have someone else doing that. We don't just let the job go. And I think historically in corporate world, it was very siloed. Your role is your role, and then that was it. And if you were out, you'd maybe make it up the next day. But no longer are we that way. So I think you're right. It's so important when you rely on someone to do something, but we've been very focused, and maybe by necessity, in finding backups for roles that we know are critical.
And so someone who's not necessarily directly related with, I don't know, some aspect of payroll, you might introduce them to that aspect and say, if we need you to do it, you need to understand this and be up to speed.
Right, right. And I've trained on some things. Like, I let go of doing payroll years ago myself. And so I told her, okay, now I feel like I don't know how to do it. If you were to, you know, not come in for on the day we need to do payroll, and everyone would be freaking out on me, first of all, but I need to make sure I know. And of course, I'm sure if push came to shove, I could do it. But yes, I mean, it's so critically important to make sure that we have backups.
One of the first things I see on the site when I go there now, and even back, let me see, pretty much as soon as you bought. So before you bought, phone number was small on the very bottom of the site, 800 number available from 7 to 5 p.m. Pacific time. After you bought it, that phone number went right to the top of the site, top right, in big over the search bar. I can see that you want to be engaged with your customers. You've talked a lot about following up with customers after they buy. Can you give me a few tips on what you do to show customers you care before they buy and stay connected with them throughout?
Sure. So if the customer ever calls, or I mentioned if they place an order and give us any information about them, we call them back. We engage with them right away. But we try not to be too pushy because I feel like we don't want to be a hard sell type offering. And then literally, if they order directly through our site, of course they get the confirmation and all the other emails, here's what to expect. We literally give every single customer a call. Because incorporating a business is a big deal to these people, and our people it flies off the top of the tongue. This is what happens, blah, blah, blah. And you need to be calm and patient with every single person, because these are the people that are going to be our lifeblood in 5 years from now when they're still placing orders, or they're serial entrepreneurs, or they need us to do their annual filing. So that's critically important that we call them back and we tell them what to expect. Also, as you may know, the states take forever to get documents filed. It's still the government we're working with. So we have this large variable. We do it in 24 hours, but then the state may take 3 weeks to get the documents back to us. And there's almost nothing we can do about it. So there is this one little component, which is we can upsell them and tell them, okay, they need to rush it, and we can have someone walk it in. And a lot of people do that. So there's a financial benefit, of course. But then there is that benefit of education, where if the customer knows, okay, I'm going to expect 3 weeks, then when it comes in 3 weeks, they're thrilled that it was what we told them. If we don't tell them 3 weeks and it comes in 3 weeks, they're thinking, what happened to my corporation? I thought it was formed 3 weeks ago. So I think all of it is about communication. Then I mentioned our final email, where we literally save, and we send to all our company every time we get a response, like, you guys are incredible. I went to this company before, and we feel like it just generates a feel-good with our customers. They're confirming in writing that they loved us, and we often do highlights of their businesses. We put them in our newsletter. We love to cross-promote our customers back because they're starting new businesses. So we kind of create a relationship where we hope they continue to engage with us.
So I also, in addition to looking for all the good stuff and where your traffic was coming from, I did a search at the Better Business Bureau, couldn't find anything. Then I went to the ripoff report, and I only found like one thing that was clearly an anomaly. Someone who said, I stopped working with them, and they still called me one time. And I thought, all right, that's a mistake that could happen, but it's not ongoing. It's just amazing that you would do this and keep it all organized. And it seems like it's the software that you were telling me about earlier that is what helps you, your CRM, is that right?
Well, we, in terms of keeping everything organized, we have an internal CRM system.
Your own custom-created.
Yes.
Okay.
And we feel like that keeps us virtually robotic in our process. But we have awesome people who really know their stuff and have been here for a long time and actually feel, I believe, passionate about it. And so our customers, I feel like, get that sense. And we do make mistakes, absolutely, but we fix it and we do right by our customers when we do, especially when you have thousands of filings, you know, on a weekly basis. And so even if we don't make the mistake, but maybe the state files it or the state says, your name XYZ is available, and then we file, and then they say, oh, sorry, it's no longer available. Of course, the customer's mad at us. And so, but we fix it, and we come back with alternative choices. So it is partially our CRM, partly that we're automated in a really nice fashion, but also that we have such human engagement that we, and we do right by our customers. Universally, people come in when there's an issue and say, hey, Deborah, you know, should we give a refund, or should we do this? And I said, just give a refund. Let's fix this problem, and let's solve it, and then let's offer when they need their next thing. I mean, sure, if we need to give a refund, fine, but let's also be really engaged and not just say, okay, we'll give you your money back, because often that's not what people want. They actually want their documents filed.
The solution.
And then, exactly.
So calling customers after they buy, I see the value of that. Do you have a couple of other things? Like, I'll give you an example. I somehow got it in my head that I was going to send cards to some customers. You know, like whenever there's an issue or if we talk and we have an interesting conversation, I have some cards right here. I mail them out, and I see people even tweet it. They'll take a picture and they'll put it up online, and I wouldn't have thought of that. Looking for other ideas like that, what else has worked for you? Calling customers, what else?
We send a little package, a bundle of a pen and a mouse pad and a T-shirt of all bizarre things to customers. If there's not necessarily a standard everyday type of thing, but we send a little things for doing business, especially to a repeat customer. If they've come back to us, or if it's someone who's referred another customer, we send it to them. So we really do focus on, we're literally putting me and my finance manager, my operator, packaging the packages this morning, because we're thinking, this is special and it's different and it gets people engaged. We send See's candy to people on the East Coast because they don't have See's candy. They love it.
You said so what?
See's candy.
Oh, See's candy. All right. They don't have that on the East Coast? I didn't know that.
I guess not. So we sent one, and they're like, we've never had this before. So now that's our kind of our
See's candy. And so you have it in the office on a regular basis, and when there's something that you want to say thank you for, you just put it in a box, you have your whole process, and you mail it out.
You got it.
I need that, too. Having it handy is so helpful.
I know.
You wouldn't think.
So
I think I got something right now. So I got this. Let me just do that to bring the color back in the camera. I think this came, I think I know who this came from, but let's open it up and see together. Make sure I don't cut myself with it. Yeah, there it is. So this is from Wistia. I referred a customer to them, so they sent me their T-shirt to say thank you to them. I'm going to wear the T-shirt. I was thinking this is what it would be. Wistia, by the way, does my video hosting. I used to have trouble with YouTube and other services. Wistia came to the rescue, and so I use them.
Oh, awesome.
Look at that. Actually.
Fits nicely.
There. Nice logo. Do you do anything like that for referral, to thank people who referred you or to encourage referrals?
Absolutely. To virtually everyone who sends us referrals, we send a MyCorp T-shirt. We have these, or a visor, and a hat, and we, or honestly, we have these funny lunch boxes, which we get so much good feedback on. These little insulated lunch boxes. So we send a ton of stuff always.
Why? Why a lunch box?
I use it, and so I always say to my team, I love this lunch box. You know, every day you feel like you're reusing it. It has our little logo on it, of course, but it just really, it's just a token. I think it could be anything. And we try, in fact, just today we were discussing, let's use up all the items we have and let's try something new next time. And we've, you know, mugs and cups and pens and the traditional stuff, but sometimes something a little different makes people think, oh, that's clever. And the other day, I have to show, I got this from a client. Oh, rats, I don't know where I put it. Oh, it's a, can you see it? A bottle opener that's from a wine. A vineyard.
Ah, yeah, I see it.
And it's a lawyer that we work with, And he met with us, and thanks so much. He said to me, you know, you always get my documents filed on time, and said this to me. Like, that's really clever, something totally unique. So we were just talking about maybe we should get away from this standard T-shirt and hats and do something very different. And this, everyone comes in my office and they say, what is that thing? And so I think it's just fun to get creative and memorable, actually.
There's something about getting something in the mail that you can touch, that you can use, yeah, in some cases that you can eat. Ongoing revenue. What is it that it's called? For some reason, I'm blanking on it, so I figured I'd just bring it up instead of Googling it. That the company of record or something that we need is...
Registered agent.
Yes. What does that cost on an annual basis?
Well, usually it's about $169 annually. So, and we have hundreds of thousands of customers that do it. That
hundreds of thousands of customers who pay you $150 or so dollars. Unreal. Okay. But it's still even not a huge price. And so for less than $200 a year that you might get from a typical customer, you're able to do all this customer support. You're able to pay for all the for all the things that you send out to them. Is that right?
Yep. And there's pretty low overhead on something like that. You know, it's not extensive cost. So the best thing is on a renewal, we're getting, you know, this kind of service. Of course, we send out their documents if they get sent to us and those types of things. But the majority of customers really don't get a whole lot of service and process or documentation. And so it ends up being a pretty profitable venture for us.
And once you get a company to do that, you just stick with them. We yep. stick with you. Yep. So here's something else that I noticed. I don't know if you even know this about the site. At one point, maybe even still now, you're sending people to a pop-up from hpylgr.com. I don't even know if you know it. Was there a virus on your site that caused that to go up, or were you using pop-ups on the site for a few weeks?
I don't know.
I can't
right,
trace
it. I don't know it.
I wonder
if... HPYLGR?
Yeah.
I'll ask my team.
You know what?
Right
Let
now.
Me give you a list, including... I'm going to send this directly to you. A list of all these things, all these pop-up services that are sending out that you're sending traffic to. Boom. I'm going to put it right here. And I'm also going to include a couple of articles, if I could find them, about what this could be. It's either an ad or it's maybe malware or something. Here, I'm going to include a Google search result so that you can see it. Boom, boom. I don't think it's on your site anymore, but I still think it's worth showing you. Here, I'll put it in Skype chat for you.
Okay, thank you.
Boom.
Okay, got it. I'll ask him.
I just find myself so digging around and making sure. You know why, Deborah? Because I can see that you've got a... I think you've got a successful business. When we met, I thought, maybe it's good. But I'm always worried that one of these guys who is only good at self-promotion is going to snow me. And so I tell my team, research people, find out if they're the real thing. I do not want to be embarrassed by having someone come on here who says that they built this great company and then find out later on at dinner or someone comes to my house and says, you know, I know that person, just really good at talking a good game, he's trying to get publicity and use you. I don't want to take advantage of my customers that way.
I hope I'm not.
You're not. I did my research, as you can see. I'm finding out all kinds of stuff. I can see that Corporate Seal, like I said, is a big organic keyword for you. I can see you do paid keyword search for words like DBA in California, Intuit Register S Corp, DBA registration. I got all kinds of research.
Awesome.
You're the real deal. What kind of revenue are you generating with this business?
Just over $8.5 million a year.
Over $8.5 million? I didn't see that. Wow.
I'm only telling you.
Thank you. How long did it take you to turn a profit with the business?
We were profitable by the second year, but the profit was marginal. But we were profitable quickly. I couldn't, as an individual, afford to be losing millions a year. So it went fast. And we remain profitable, and we continue to optimize our profit. Certainly, we found certain ventures where we spend more, we make more, but we're not as profitable. So we're just, you know, we constantly are focused on what's making the most for us. And truth be told, I think it changes a lot. Sometimes it's seasonal. Sometimes it's, you know, Google changes their algorithms, or our search engine marketing team has a strategy that doesn't work. Or spent a ton on social media, or I've traveled a ton to try to generate business or relationships that, you know, may not be successful, or sometimes they're incredibly successful. So it just depends.
we asked you if you could recommend a book to the audience, what would it be? Do you remember what you said?
I said Onward by Charles Schulz, right?
Yeah,
Howard why? Schulz. Yeah, I love that book. I feel like it's not just a happy, happy story, right? Because there's also this big point in time where the business is not going in the direction, the right direction, and big changes are afoot, and thinking about even just silly things like, did the smell of the cooking of the sandwiches disrupt the actual aroma of the coffee beans, and was it kind of compromising the integrity of the entire business? And I don't know why, it just resonated with me in a way that, well, plus I saw him speak, and I think that helped too, but I just felt like, gosh, it just resonated in a way that not all things stay the same, and you always have to be on your toes, and you always, even with huge companies like Starbucks, and we're not obviously even in that ballpark, but, and I don't even know if I want to be. I feel like right now, things are so good, and maybe it doesn't need to be 800 million. Maybe 8.5 million is a happy number and we're all successful and everything's marvelous. But staying on your toes is critically important even to maintain that, amount of success.
You know, I don't know why I haven't read that book, but I did read his first book, Pour Your Heart Into It. Uh-huh. And what you're talking about, the smell of the sandwiches, I remember him obsessing about little things like that. Yeah, in the book, he talked about someone wanted, I forget what it was, like skim milk or light milk. And he said, well, that's not the way they do it in Italy. Should we do this? It was like a personal crisis. He sat down, he tried it, he experimented, and then he finally gave in because it made sense. But that attention to detail is something that I forget he has.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I think we've got a lot in this interview. I'm going to suggest to people, if they want to check out the site that we've just been talking about, that they just go to mycorporation.com, sign up. I vetted her. I vetted the company. I'm proud to have you on here. I take this stuff so seriously.
I love it. That's great.
Thank you. You know what? Here, let me see if I could. Oh, where was that? It'll take me too long. I just got another email from someone in the audience who said, Andrew, I know you keep worrying about whether you're having any kind of an impact. I built my business while listening to Mixergy, and it helped me so much. And I feel like that is the mission right here.
Yeah. Let us do a promotion of you on our newsletter, too. It would be fun.
I would love it. Do you want to send out this link to this interview when
it's
up?
Definitely.
All right.
Yeah.
Awesome. This is terrific. Thank you so much for doing this. Thank you so much for telling your audience about it. And I hope we'll get to meet in person.
Absolutely, my pleasure. It was nice talking to you.
Same here, and thank you all for being a part of it. If you got anything of value from this, please find a way to tell Deborah. Find a way to say thank you. That's such a good way to start a conversation, a relationship with someone. And I could see in my notes here, she is a relationship person to the hilt. So if you find a way to say thank you, I think that it's going to go a long way. Thank you for being a part of it. I'll say it to you first. Bye, guys.